I'm Kiara.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Carter.
And we just three black folks who love true crime. This is the I Ain't a Killer podcast. Hey, Killer Bees.
Hello.
Hi.
We are back.
Another week of the madness.
Mm-hmm. Another heavy one too.
Apparently.
It is. Allegedly.
It's very heavy. I apologize in advance. Or I don't. I mean, it depends what you're into. How are y'all?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm gonna go these past few days. Just getting used to living alone again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I can hear my voice echoing through the house now and shit. I'm just like, damn. But I'm good though. I'm good.
That's good.
I'm excited for you to get to the part where you're like, actually, I don't want nobody in my house somewhere.
Yeah.
That was the best part for me.
Yes. I appreciate the alone time.
Yeah.
I'm good. Fresh off of vacation again. I'm gonna have a
sun kissed.
No, I love it.
I got a tan.
Yeah.
You really did.
You got this nice little caramel tan.
It's great. Yeah. I want them to say, I'll put a picture in the Facebook group.
Yeah.
I'm so dark, my foundation don't match.
Love that.
But yeah, no, I'm good. Anticipatorily tired for the week, but excited to be back.
Yeah.
You'll pull it through.
It was worth it for the bacon.
Yeah.
You'd be collecting Pisces like Pokemon.
You know? You know what's wild is my fiance's nephew and mom are also Pisces.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I was like, is that right? I think that's right.
It was 9 months ago because they were getting busy.
Right.
It's always like around a holiday or something. You're like, wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matthew Nathan.
Right. I'm good. I cut myself last night.
Oh, shit.
Trying to cook.
What?
I know.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's on my pinky.
Oh, okay, so small. Okay.
Y'all. Please.
It didn't feel small.
It looks like a little set. But
it's two. One, two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you making?
Meatloaf.
Oh, okay.
I was like, you know the veggie choppers where you go like that and mm-hmm. it like helps you chop the veggie?
Mm-hmm.
I got through that, everything, all the food was made, and I was cleaning up. I was trying to like take it apart so I could clean it properly. And then it got me.
That's how it be.
Yeah. So that's okay. I don't know what it is about being an adult and like hurting yourself. It feels so childish. Like, why am I wearing a bandage? I'm 30 years old.
I feel like I fell in the ocean and cut my leg.
Oh, no.
I was sitting on the beach bleeding. I was like, damn, that was kind of embarrassing. Here we are.
I know exactly how you feel because I was walking over by the train station. This was some years ago. And I was like maybe 28. And I slipped off the curb and I scraped my knee. I was like, am I 8?
Right.
How did I do this?
Your knee feels especially
yes. Yes, exactly. So yeah, I feel you on that.
Okay, so let's get into this. It's a lot of content warnings. I'm just off the top, y'all. This is really not a great one. I mean, it's an interesting story, but there's a lot of, it's pretty bad. Okay. Content warnings, molestation, underage alcohol and drug use, extreme physical assault, mention of rape, murder, violence against children, abuse of a corpse, strangulation, forced drug use, and kidnapping.
Oh, you wasn't playing.
I told you. So this is the story of Tommy Lynn Sells. Have y'all ever heard of him? I hadn't either. And I was like, how many more of these people exist that we've just never heard of?
Yeah, right.
It is actually fascinating that people can have podcasts for years and there's always subject matter.
Always something.
Because there's so much shit. And there's so many, like, I don't want to say genres of crime, but there's so many different types of way to get an infraction or to harm people.
And we don't even touch the unsolved stuff.
Oh, my
God. There's so much unsolved stuff.
That shit stresses me out. I'm sorry.
I think I did one unsolved.
Yes.
The ABC.
I hate it. My least favorite story of yours, thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's get into it. Tommy Lynn Sells was born in Oakland, California on June 28th, 1964. Unfortunately for me, he is a cancer.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. He was one of five children, and his mother, Nina, wasn't married throughout his whole childhood. He was led to believe that a man named William Sells was his father, but come to find out, it was actually a man named Joe Lovins, who was a used car salesman. He actually died when Tommy was 11. But the reason why Tommy thought that William's house was his father was because Joe, his real father, had bailed William out of like a financial hold or a financial hole. And as a thank you, William agreed to claim Joe's children on his insurance. So it was like a whole insurance scam.
Oh, wow.
But they just allowed the children to believe that this random man was their father. So and they
was
took
he
his
involved?
Name. No.
What?
So just this random guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was using the children as like insurance tax stuff. And they just took his name.
Okay.
Starts weird already.
That's horrible.
Yeah, no.
Tommy also had a twin sister. Her name was Tammy Jean. And when they were 18 months old, their mother moved them and then all the rest of the kids to St. Louis, where she had some other family. And unfortunately, almost immediately after they moved, Tammy contracted meningitis. And at this point, they were still 18 months old. Aww. And Tammy didn't survive.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. Shortly after her death, Tommy was sent to live with his aunt named Bonnie Walpole in Holcomb, Missouri. And according to Bonnie, Nina, the mother, never visited. So the aunt was like, okay, if you're never going to come get your child, like, I'm going to adopt him and make sure that he's taken care of. But as soon as Nina heard this, she was like, I'm taking my kid back. And at the age of 5, Tommy was returned back to his mother, which was pretty sad to me. One, because he only knew Bonnie as his mom,
right,
like throughout his whole like young childhood.
Yeah, she should have never said that.
No,
that was so spiteful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Tommy's mom wasn't able to or didn't want to take care of him. And then all of a sudden when someone else is like, I'll step up, she's like, no, you won't.
Right.
And I also wonder if like how different his life would have looked if he had stayed with Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the Office of the Clark County Prosecuting Attorney, at the age of 7, Tommy was started to drink alcohol, and he would get it from his grandfather's stash, and that habit just never stopped throughout his whole life.
Damn, you said 7?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
At the age of 8, he was allowed to spend time with this adult man named Willis Clark, who lived on their street. And Willis would take Tommy on day trips. He'd give him these gifts and money, and they would just spend a lot of time together.
Ew.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Right. Tommy also later on claimed that Willis had molested him throughout their time together.
Well, unfortunately, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
She let her kid hang out with a strange older man.
And Tommy claimed that his mom was fully aware of the situation and almost encouraged their relationship. And that was really traumatic for Tommy. It was also later officially known that Willis was a pedophile, and he molested boys for like years and years, including Tommy. So Tommy's claims were correct. And at the age of 10, Tommy started heavily abusing drugs. So he just got into it as a very young child, and it really never stopped for him.
Did it say what kind of drugs?
Yes, his drug of choice was heroin.
At 10?
I don't know if it started at 10, but throughout his life it was.
Thanks.
They did say that he smoked a lot of weed when he was a kid.
Okay.
So maybe that was it, kind of like, it was a gateway drug. Just kidding, I don't think that.
I don't think that either, but that is why I asked, because I'm like, what kind of drugs did he have access to at 10 years old?
Yeah.
And also, like, those do very different things to your development. I mean, he was already drinking alcohol for
mm-hmm.
years, but...
Yeah, they didn't really specify. They definitely said weed, and then later his choice was heroin. So I don't know when the crossover was, but it started too early regardless. So 3 years after he started abusing drugs, he was 13, and he crawled into his grandmother's bed naked while she was sleeping. And obviously the family freaked the fuck out.
Yeah.
And they kicked him out of the house, and they told him he could never come back. So shortly after they did this, his mom and siblings just left town. They were like, bye. And they basically just abandoned him at the age of 13, and he was forced to fend for himself.
Damn, so he's like living on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And just a few days after the family left town, in a fit of rage, according to Tommy, he assaulted a woman by striking her with a pistol. And luckily that woman survived. But that and crawling into his grandmother's bed are kind of the first signs of like disturbing criminal activity, and it only escalates from there.
I'm trying to figure out where the fuck he got a pistol from.
Right.
I mean, he was on the street, so who knows?
Also, he's been doing hard drugs for 3 years
for a long time.
But hey, have this gun.
Right. By 1978, at the age of 14, Tommy was a permanent drifter. He was a nomad. He would hop trains and steal and basically do anything that he had to do to survive. And he basically continued to do that for like the next 20 years. He would take odd jobs. He would use trains and hitching rides to get him across the country. Sometimes he'd steal some cars. He would work as a carny, a barber, a mechanic, a laborer at this time. Basically any odd jobs that he could get just to get him to the next place. So get him a hotel room for the night or whatever drugs he needed. While he was traveling across the U.S., he would commit crimes, doing drugs and stuff, and later started killing people. So he was dubbed the Coast to Coast Killer. All right, let's get into the really freaky stuff. So in May of 1981, at the age of 17, Tommy was reunited with his family. So they were living in Little Rock, Arkansas at the time. But it only lasted for like a few days because he got into the shower naked with his mother and he tried to sexually assault her.
Oh yes. My God.
So they kicked him out and he was just never reunited with his family again, which, I mean,
yeah,
makes
course.
Sense to me.
Yeah.
According to a few sources, he did try to get help from a mental health clinic around this time. So around the age of 17, 18, but it didn't work. And there's not a lot of detail on that. I don't know what type of mental health clinic he went to. I don't know who's at fault for the failed assistance, but it just didn't work according to these sources. And it was around this time that his drinking problem got really, really, really bad. And he was arrested in 1982 for public intoxication. In July of 1985, Tommy was 21. He was working at a carnival in Missouri, and he met a 28-year-old woman named Ina Court, and she had a 4-year-old son named Rory. Rory. That name is so hard for me.
Yeah, I can't.
It's like rural.
Yeah.
So Ina invited Tommy to her home that evening, and according to Tommy, they had consensual sex. But from his past and future offenses, I don't believe that. I feel like he probably sexually assaulted her. He said that they fell asleep, and he woke up to see that she was stealing from his backpack. Mind you, Tommy is not a reliable narrator, mm-hmm. but some of these stories, we only know the details from Tommy, so take it for what you want. He said that he woke up and she was stealing from his backpack. He then proceeded to, trigger warning, don't forget, he proceeded to beat Ina to death with her son's baseball bat.
Oh my fucking God, what?
Yeah, it escalated really quick with this man. He then murdered her son because he felt like the child could be a potential witness. And the son was 4 years old.
No, I think he tried to sexually assault her. She tried to fight him, probably, mm-hmm. and then he killed her.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Because you don't have shit. Why is she running through your backpack?
I literally thought the same.
That part.
What is she stealing?
Nothing. The backpack. That's it.
That's what I'm saying.
Nothing inside. So both of their bodies were found 3 days later, and by that time, Tommy had left town. In May of 1987, and so the way that this story goes, just a little precursor, is it kind of just. We're going to talk about the different crimes that he committed that we hear of from him after the fact. So we get the details from him once he's like caught at the end. In May of 1987, Suzanne Courts disappeared after leaving a bar in Rockport, New York by herself. Her body was found near Niagara Falls on September 5th, 1995. That's 8 years after she disappeared.
Oh my God.
And her cause of death was unknown due to decomposition. And it was only until 2004, after he had been caught, that Tommy confessed that he murdered a woman in that area at that time. And he was also able to identify her and some photos from the crime scene. So that's how they determined that he was the one who committed the murder.
Wait, so her body was found or mm-hmm. her bones were found?
Her body.
That's so interesting how that works. 8 years and her body didn't fully decompose.
Yeah, I guess it was decomposed enough to where they couldn't figure out the like how she died,
mm-hmm.
but not enough to where it was just a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's so interesting.
So, big trigger warning for this story. On November 17th, 1987, while hitchhiking, Tommy was picked up by a man named Keith Dardine, and he was a 29-year-old who had a family. Keith brought Tommy to his home for dinner. He was trying to, you know, do a kind thing. When they got to Keith's home, Tommy immediately pulled out a handgun and shot Keith in the head twice. He then emasculated him, which, if you don't know what that means, he cut off his genitalia before he shot him in the head one more time. So Keith had, like I said, he had a family, which included a 3-year-old son, Peter, and Peter was found bludgeoned to death. Tommy also attacked Keith's wife, Elaine. She was 30 years old, and she was also 7 months pregnant. So he beat Elaine pretty severely, and it caused her to go into labor. And she gave birth to her daughter, who they had previously named Casey. Really, really, really trigger warning, y'all. Casey was also beaten to death. And after Tommy beat the newborn baby, he mutilated, raped, and beat Elaine to death. He also sexually assaulted her corpse with the baseball bat that he had used to murder her children. When the police entered the scene, they found Elaine, her 3-year-old son, and her newborn daughter all tucked into bed. And
what the fuck?
Right. This case went unsolved for 12 years, and it was only ever solved when Tommy confessed.
Can you imagine some shit like that happening in your neighborhood?
No.
And them not being able to figure out who the fuck did it?
That for 12 years. And the only reason they found out is because he was like, oh, yeah, I did that.
Mm-mm. I don't know what I would do. I don't know. Because, I mean, obviously you can't afford to just pick up and move. But I don't think I would ever just, like, be outside ever mm-mm. again.
Yeah. What do they call it when you're, like, literally afraid to leave your house?
Agoraphobia.
I think I might develop something akin to that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My doors would be locked. There would be cameras everywhere, mm-hmm. weapons in every room.
Right.
And it's wild because, I mean, this was the 80s. So they weren't as, like, privy to the dangers of, like, bringing strangers into their home and hitchhiking and stuff. So I feel like it probably wasn't uncommon that somebody picked up a hitchhiker right. and maybe, like, did a good deed for them by trying to make them dinner. But I don't know. Tommy Sells was wild and was just committing these crimes to perfectly nice strangers.
It's sad that you can't do things like that for people. Because, like, I'll be driving home, like, from the Wayfield, which is, like, not far from my house, and mm-hmm. I'll see, like, what appears to be a woman just carrying grocery bags. And I want to, everything in me wants to stop, mm-hmm. but no, I can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I helped a woman, she didn't speak any English. I helped her get to the laundromat, like, mm-hmm. down the street or whatever, her and her two sons. She had, like, a baby with her. Like, mm-hmm. I think that was probably, like, the only reason why I helped her. But in the back of my mind the entire time, I was like, fuck, I'm doing this really nice thing, but this could go left immediately, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Thankfully, it didn't. But, yeah, it is sad that you can't do shit like that for people because it happens all the time.
Yeah. It's really scary.
Dang.
So in 1990, a couple years after the Dardine family was killed, Tommy stole a truck in Wyoming, and he was sentenced to 16 months in prison, which is so, like, interesting in the grand scheme of this story mm-hmm. that,
yes.
like, it took him stealing a car to actually go to prison, but
yeah.
he's been on, like, a murder spree for years and years at this
right,
point.
Right.
But
that's
this
is going to be happening a lot in our stories.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I just murdered 15 people, but, like, my headlight's out.
Yes.
And got caught, like, stealing panties in the store, but had, like, killed 3 people.
Yes.
Yes. I
yes.
forgot what his name was,
uh-huh.
but yeah, I remember that.
Right. How? So this actually was pretty important to understanding Tommy as a whole, this stint in prison, because he was diagnosed with a personality disorder.
Mm.
So I guess while he was there, he was able to see a psychoanalyst or whoever is able to diagnose people with these type of things. So his personality disorder, it consisted of antisocial, borderline, and schizoid features. They determined that he had substance use disorder, which included severe opioid, amphetamines, and alcohol dependence. Like I said before, his choice of drug was heroin, but he would take just about any drug that he could find. They also diagnosed him with bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, and psychosis. So he had all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. I mean, again, we can feel bad for the child and not the adult in the situation, but who knows what could have been different if like his time in a mental health facility earlier in his life had gone differently, or I don't know if he was able to stay with his aunt. So yes, this is what we're dealing with at, well, we've been dealing with this, but now we know a little bit more about his psyche at this point in his life. On May 13th, 1992, Fabian Witherspoon, she was a 13-year-old woman in Charleston, West Virginia. She was driving when she saw Tommy panhandling under an overpass, and he was holding a sign that said, "I will work for food." So again, just like Keith Dardine, Fabian felt sorry for him and she took him to her home. She asked him to wait outside while she went inside to get some food and clothing for him.
Wait, how old was she?
She was 19.
Okay.
So by the time she got back to her front door with the item she was going to give to him, he had made his way inside of her home. Tommy grabbed a knife from her kitchen and trapped her in a bathroom, and he attempted to rape her. Fabian fought back, and she hit him in the head repeatedly with a ceramic duck. I guess some decor in the bathroom. Oh,
please tell me he passed out or something.
No. She was able to get control of the knife, and she did stab him. The knife nicked his kidney and his liver, and it sliced his testicle. Look, especially with all that shit he'd be ingesting. In retaliation to this, Tommy beat her over the head with a piano stool, which is wild. He tried to escape, but because of his severe injuries, he just wasn't physically able to, and he ended up in the ICU under police custody. Fabian Witherspoon sustained significant injuries, including a gaping head wound, a hand laceration, and both of those required surgery, but luckily she did survive this attack.
Oh my God.
Afterwards, Tommy took a plea deal on malicious wounding charges, and he served 5 years in prison.
What?
5 years.
What about the attempted sexual assault? What attempted murder? A gaping head wound is an attempted murder.
5 years.
He also came into her house. Like, there's got to be some charges for that.
Like.
Mm-hmm. Again, another point in the story where if things had gone differently, maybe.
They also know he's already been diagnosed with severe mental illnesses. So,
yes.
Let's do maybe 5 years in a mental health facility.
Right.
Like.
Yep, exactly.
Exactly. So throw some medication in there. So
something.
Something.
Try, bitch.
Yeah, and I mean, he was also homeless at this point, so like maybe if he had had more services available to him, I don't know. There's so many different things.
Yeah.
Throughout this story that could have changed what happened. So while he was in prison, they did more mental health examinations, and obviously it was similar to his other stuff, and they noted specifically his bipolar disorder. He also married someone while he was in prison.
You are lying.
What type of
no brain ass bitch saw this man, visited him in jail, and said, "You know what, husband?
You material. The one.
Yeah. You know,
you the one for me." That's why, like, I mean, I guess there's someone for everyone.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm so what? Sorry.
There doesn't need to be someone for him.
Oh, why?
That's all services for him, and that is it.
Yeah.
No.
Thankfully, and I don't know, because throughout this story, the people that Tommy attacked were basically strangers.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do anything to his wife.
But he tried to attack his mom.
Yes.
Well, maybe he hated her.
Yeah.
She did allow him to be sexually assaulted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was vindictive.
Yeah.
I don't know why he tried to attack the grandma, but.
It might have been similar because she was also a caretaker.
It's true. So in 1997, after 5 years, he was released from prison and he moved to Tennessee with his wife, Nora Price, but he left her the same year, and there's no details if there was anything that happened to her. So I'm assuming not. But after leaving her, he continued across his, he continued with his cross country tirade. So in October of 1997, like a blink after he left his wife, he was in Lawrence, Illinois, and 10-year-old Joel Kirkpatrick was stabbed to death while asleep in his bedroom. This is an interesting one. So Joel's mother, Julie Rhea Harper, said that she ran into her son's room and found a man wearing a ski mask. She fought the man off and he fled, leaving a steak knife from the kitchen on the floor outside the bedroom. But when she told this story, the authorities didn't believe her. They saw that there was no signs of struggle or forced entry into the home. And the mom was named as the primary suspect. And in 2000, she was charged with first-degree murder of her son. Yes.
So how did he end up being...
He admitted to doing it later.
What?
Okay, but sometimes serial killers will just start admitting to ridiculous things. And this doesn't sound like his type of shit.
So, yes. And that was an issue that the police came to, after the fact. And I'll talk about that, where he just started saying he did everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't know what to believe. So, luckily with this situation, there were details that they didn't release to the public that he knew. So they could directly connect him to the crime.
Damn, it's like getting locked up for your own kid's murder.
And it was all circumstantial. There was no concrete evidence. So they locked her up for the murder of her son off of circumstantial evidence, which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
They also said that Joel, the child, was in the middle of a custody battle between Julie and her ex-husband. So they thought that maybe that's the reason why she killed her son, which...
That doesn't make any sense.
Literally. No. She was convicted and sentenced to 65 years.
Are you fucking kidding me?
65 years.
How much of that did she end up having to serve?
Only two. Thankfully, around 2 years into her sentence was when Tommy was officially picked up by the authorities. And the only reason why they connected him to the crime was because there was a true crime reporter that was writing a book about him. And so he was interviewing him, spending a lot of time with him. And Tommy just made an offhand comment that oh yeah, there was this little kid and blah, blah, blah.
So if it wasn't for this journalist or this author, she would still be
in jail.
That
would suck his dick. I'm so sorry. No, I'm so sorry. When the way jail is not...
Jail is horrible.
Prison is fucking... Ooh, my headphones fell off. Prison, jail, that shit is so fucking terrible. And then, somebody telling you you gotta spend 65 years there...
For your son.
For my son. I would've died.
Yeah.
And then you got me out by accident? Yeah, I'm sucking it.
That's fair. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, the reporter that was writing the book... got the confession from Tommy, and he basically told the police. And
the police are so useless.
That's what I'm saying. All of the things that Tommy was caught for, he just handed to them on a silver platter. Wow. They did not solve any of these crimes on their own.
Did they interview him at all? Because why is a journalist getting this information?
Eventually, after he was caught. And the journalist did interview him after he was caught while he was in jail. But Carter said... Exactly. But Carter said, the police were suspicious of him because he was just admitting to dozens and dozens of murders.
And it was there's no way that we're this incompetent.
Yeah.
Turns out, yes, yes,
every fucking story we do, it'd be the police is nah, that can't be it. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. What?
Wow.
You gotta be kidding me.
So on April 18th, 1999.
Wait, can I read something I Googled while you were talking? Because I was just super curious about it. I feel like a lot of people that end up, a lot of us know that Black people have been overdiagnosed with bipolar disorder because we're just undercared for by that system. But I feel like it's so often that bipolar disorder occurs with drug abuse. They're in these stories that we do. It's really high percent, so I had to Google it really quick, and I'm looking at this article, and it says that we're not just imagining that there's a huge correlation, and that there's a caution now about diagnosing bipolar disorder in the presence of substance abuse because of overlapping symptomology. And it makes me think about how a lot of people who have CPTSD also have a lot of the same attributes of ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People can be misdiagnosed with one or the other.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder how many of these people in the stories that we do were diagnosed with bipolar disorder that really just had severe, because drinking and doing drugs from 7 years old has to do something to your
brain. Absolutely.
100%. 100%.
Was he bipolar, or is bipolar a more expensive thing than we understand it to be?
Right. Interesting.
No, his frontal lobe was water. Ain't no fucking way.
Jello with
holes. Seven?
Seven as well.
No, yeah. You said jello with holes.
Yeah.
No, for real.
Right.
Absolutely.
I was just curious about that.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a great app.
Yeah, thank you for that. So on April 18th, 1999, a 9-year-old named Mary Beatrice Perez was kidnapped from the annual Fiesta Festival in San Antonio, Texas.
She's a fucking baby.
Yeah, child. Her body was found a week later in a creek, and she had been raped and strangled to death with her own t-shirt. So in late 1999, Tommy Lynn Sells had settled briefly in Del Rio, Texas. He befriended this family, the Harris family, after meeting them at a local church. Yes, the
same. So he worked the church.
Yes, correct.
It's always church.
Mm-hmm. He had visited their trailer home several times and just had a relationship with the family. So on December 31st,
so he is able to maintain relationships with people without killing them. Okay,
spoke to some.
So on December 31st, because of his relationship with the family, Tommy knew that the dad was going to be out of town, leaving the family kind of exposed in their trailer. What he didn't know was that same night, Katie Harris, one of the daughters, she was 13. She was having a sleepover with her friend Crystal Searles, who was a 10-year-old. And Crystal, along with Crystal's 7-year-old sister, Mark, was sleeping over at the Harris home that night. So Mark, who was 7, you know, she wants to hang out with the older kids. And Crystal, her sister, was like, no, you can't stay with us. So Crystal and Katie were sleeping in one bedroom in a bunk bed. Crystal was on the top bunk and Katie was on the bottom. And then Mark was forced to stay in the bedroom across the hallway. And in a later account, Mark said that she was just like fuming for 2 hours because her older sister wouldn't let her like hang out with the cool kids. Mm-hmm. So this story comes from a later account from Crystal, who again was the 10-year-old that was spending the night at her friend Katie's house. So Crystal remembers that they went to bed late that night and she woke up to a scream around 3:50 a.m. So on the top bunk where Crystal was sleeping, she popped her head up, but not like all the way. She just kind of was trying to see what was going on. The lights were on in the room and there was what Crystal calls a scary man standing at the end of the bed. Mm-mm. Crystal described him as having long, dark, scruffy hair and a big, long, scary, bushy beard that took over his entire face. She also said that he had mean eyes. Mind you, this is a 10-year-old describing this man. Mm. Crystal noticed that Katie had blood all over her, and the man was holding a knife across Katie's throat and a hand over her mouth. And unfortunately, it was then that the man cut Katie's throat and she fell to the ground while Crystal was watching. So at this point, Crystal said that she thought that the man didn't know that she was there, which he didn't. The man was Tommy, obviously. But Tommy didn't know that Katie was having a sleepover. So Crystal kind of had this little moment of hope, like, okay, maybe I'll be okay. But as Tommy was walking out of the room and was about to turn the lights off, he turned back and he saw Crystal on the top bunk. Crystal tried to move out of the way, like scurry to the other side of the bed, but it didn't work. And Tommy came over and cut her throat with the same knife. Crystal remembers lying there and Tommy just walking out of the room, turning off the light and closing the door. And Crystal managed to get out of the bunk, the top bunk, fall to her hands and knees next to her friend Katie. And she said Katie was making these like gasping, choking noises and Crystal was trying to comfort her. And Crystal said that she was trying to like talk to her and tell her it was okay, but she realized that she couldn't talk. And once Katie stopped making noises, Crystal knew that she had to go get help. So Crystal first went to check on her sister, Mark, who was sleeping across the hallway, and her sister was asleep, luckily. And Crystal tried to yell at her, but she couldn't speak. So she was like, okay, I have to figure out what's going on. She was also scared that he had killed the rest of the family in the home. So she immediately fled. It was dark outside. It was the middle of the night. She was only in her pajamas. She didn't have any shoes and she saw a light in the distance and she just started making her way towards that. She walked about a quarter of a mile and she finally got to a home that had a light on their front porch. Mind you, this is a 10-year-old child whose throat was cut and she's doing all of these things. It's insane. So she starts banging on the door, and the man on the other side of the door was like asking her who she was, and she couldn't speak, so she just kept banging. And eventually he opened the door, and Crystal was able to write on a pad of paper. She said, quote, "The Harrises are hurt. Tell them to hurry. My neck needs help. Will I live?" And it was at 5:30 a.m. that that man called the Texas Rangers, and they got to the Harrises' home where
so
they found
2 hours later
from the incident. Yeah. So they get there and they find that Katie hadn't survived. At 6 a.m., Pam Searles, who is Mark and Crystal's mom, was called and told that Crystal had been attacked, and they needed her permission to do life flight, like the helicopters, to the San Antonio hospital. Pam arrived at the hospital, and she found that Crystal's trachea and her vocal cords had been hit, which is why Crystal wasn't able to talk. And she said, Pam, the mom, said that Crystal kept, like, not asking her verbally, but basically saying, like, is Katie okay? And Pam said that she didn't have the heart to tell her that Katie had passed away at that point. So when Crystal was out of surgery, she talked to the police and she told them everything that she knew, all the details that we just explained, which I'm still like in awe that this is a 10-year-old that had gone through like the most traumatic thing. And she remembers so many little details. It's like incredible. Yeah.
Right.
So they had a forensic artist that was flown to San Antonio to work with Crystal. And Crystal said that she couldn't get the picture of the man out of her head. And she was like surprised at how accurate the sketch artist was. And because of that sketch, the police were able to bring Crystal a photo lineup. And within 10 seconds, she was able to point out Tommy Lynn Sells.
Wow.
So immediately Tommy became the number one suspect, and investigators arrived at his home at 5:30 a.m., which was almost 24 hours exactly from when the murder was committed.
Did he kill the mom of the family?
He only killed Katie.
Only killed Katie. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Later, he admits that he was planning to kill all of them. Mm-hmm. But then after he saw that Crystal was there, he decided that he needed to leave. So when they got to his home, Tommy was just there in the doorway. Like, the door was unlocked and he was just standing there. And they said the first thing he said was, "I'm glad I finally got caught. I was tired of doing this." Yeah.
So you just could have, never mind.
I mean, you could have just taken yourself to the police.
Right.
But I don't know. So they found the murder weapon, it was an 11-inch butcher knife that was like super, super thin because Tommy had sharpened it so many times. I don't know why that would exist. 11-inch butcher knife.
What the fuck do you need that for?
As like a regular civilian.
Right.
Who's not like cutting up full cows or something.
Right. Don't you need a chef license for that or something? Oh,
you should.
I'm like,
you should. Goodness. And they should all be registered.
Right.
So the knife had been thrown in some bushes behind Tommy's house, and he told police exactly where he had put it. And this is when he admits that he had considered killing all six people that were in the trailer but didn't. The police drive Tommy to jail, and they say he was pretty quiet until just randomly he said, quote, "I guess you want to know about the other murders." So they immediately took him to an interrogation room.
Because I know they were like, other?
Right. Confused. Confused.
But also, that should be a question that y'all should be asking too. Like, have you done this before?
Right.
Yeah.
This is why
does he have to prompt this?
Yeah.
Like, once again, y'all suck.
Not him starting the conversation. Right. So I guess you don't know about the other shit.
You know what? Actually, we do.
You know?
Funny you say so.
Yeah, if you feel like sharing.
If not, you know, we can pick it up later.
Yeah, no pressure.
Once you get comfortable and settled. So they listened to him for hours and hours talking about how he would go from state to state killing men, women, and children. So this story and everything that Tommy is telling the police at this point, they were like super suspicious. I guess there had been a situation, maybe I should have got more details. I can include an article about it, of a serial killer not too... there wasn't a lot of time in between the serial killer and Tommy Sells within this town. And the serial killer admitted to committing a lot of murders that he didn't. And the police got a lot of flack for it. So they were already like kind of on edge about taking Tommy seriously for all of these murders that he's confessing to. Because he confessed to killing over 70 people. And they were like, I don't know. Because, I mean, and at this point, they only... are able to fully connect him to the murder of Katie, mm-hmm. but they are suspicious of all these people that he claims to have killed. He told police that his first murder occurred at the age of 15 when he broke into a home in Mississippi and he discovered that a grown man was performing fellatio on a young boy. And Tommy says that just a rage overcame him and he killed the man. But this was never confirmed.
Yeah, it sounds like he's projecting his own experience.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to kill the person who did that to him.
Yeah, that does make sense. He also claimed to have killed a man in 1980 with an ice pick near a Chinese restaurant in L.A., also not confirmed. So these are kind of just like random stories that he's throwing up. They're like, I don't know if I believe that, but also you're the cops. So I feel like y'all need to figure that out. But they did say it was never confirmed. So I'm assuming they did whatever they're supposed to do to make sure that.
Well, I wouldn't bank on that.
Right, exactly.
Not at all. So over the next 9 months, police were able to confirm with evidence that Tommy Lynn Sells was responsible for 22 murders. They do think that he committed more than that, but those are the only ones that they could definitely tie him to.
Yeah.
So in addition to the ones that I described earlier in the story, these are some of the murders that Tommy committed. More warnings. John Cade, age 39, he was killed on July 5th, 1979 in Mississippi during a home invasion. Joanne Tate, age 35, was killed on April 27th, 1982 in St. Louis. She had also been sexually assaulted. Colleen Gill, age 33, and her daughter, Tiffany Gill, age 4, were beaten to death on July 31st, 1983 in St. Louis. Stephanie Kelly Stroh, age 21, was strangled, covered in concrete, and dumped into a spring on October 15th, 1987 in Illinois.
He's so chaotic.
Mm-hmm. There's no pattern.
They're so disorganized.
There's no demographic, specific demographic. It's all over the place. Men, women, children of all ages.
Now, is he sexually assaulting the boys or the men?
Because
I've noticed that, like, with the women.
They don't say so.
Yeah.
And it seems like the adult women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, yeah. I guess
that is a pattern, yeah.
Especially with his history of being molested. I wonder why that is.
Yeah. I don't know. Kent Allen Lawton, age 51, was stabbed and buried in a grave on December 18, 1988 in Arizona. Teresa Hall, age 25, and Tiffany Hall, age 5, her daughter, were beaten to death by a wooden leg from their table, their dining room table, on December 9th, 1991 in Marion, Florida. Stephanie Mahaney, age 13, she was kidnapped from her bedroom. He injected her with cocaine, sexually assaulted and strangled her to death on October 15, 1997 in Springfield, Missouri. Yvette Sophia Mueller, age 19, she was raped and he chopped her up with an axe and buried her on December 14, 1997 in Las Vegas.
So like he chopped up her body?
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm like, where did that come from?
That's what I'm saying. Right. Where's this pattern coming from?
There's none. It's just sporadic.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Bros, age 40, he was shot to death in his motorhome on April 15, 1998 in San Antonio, Texas. Deborah Harris, age 31, and her daughter, Ambria Halliburton, age 9, the mother was raped and they were both stabbed to death on April 4, 1999. Mm. Haley McCone, age 13, she was kidnapped from a park. She was sexually assaulted and shot in the head on July 5, 1999 in Oklahoma. In 2000, a jury convicted Tommy Lynn Sells of the murder of Katie Harris, and he was sentenced to execution in Texas. So they pretty much say, and they give Crystal the, like, not honor, but they say that she's responsible for catching this serial mm-hmm. killer, which I mean, she is. Yeah. So there's a lot. I actually was brought to this story from her story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of documentaries and stuff specifically about what she went through. But so the murder of Katie Harris was the reason why he was convicted. He was sentenced to execution in Texas. Soon after, he pleaded guilty to the murder of Mary Beatrice Perez, which was the 9-year-old I talked about who was kidnapped from a festival
mm-hmm.
and buried by a river. He confessed to her murder, and he received an additional life sentence for that crime. He was housed on death row in the Allen B. Polensky unit near Livingston, Texas. And in 2004, that's when he confessed to the murder of Joel Kirkpatrick, the one that his, Joel's mother went to jail for the murder. And after Tommy confessed, they acquitted Joel's mother of the crime. But since he was already on death row, they never formally charged him with the murder. Mm. On January 3rd, 2014, a Del Rio judge set Tommy Lincell's execution date for April 3rd, 2014. They asked if he wanted to make a final statement. He said no. And at 6:27 p.m., he was pronounced dead. Crystal, Searles, and members of both the Harris and Perez family attended the execution. And he's gone.
Attending an execution is wild. But I mean,
having legal execution is wild. Yeah. Like, it's not even because I feel sorry for him. It's because, I don't know, I just feel like that was a wild ass story, first of all.
It was.
I know.
And then to see all that and to understand this person's life and for us to not have a system that's like hell bent on figuring out why people act like that is scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we're just gonna kill him. Like,
yeah.
You need to interview the fuck out of him. You need to, if you're going to execute him, you need to take his brain and you need to map that shit every day for 30 years
yeah.
to figure out what the fuck is going on and mm-hmm. why he acts like that. Because mm-hmm. it's just going to keep happening again.
Yep. And I think it's wild to me that he was only like actually convicted of Katie Harris, Mary Beatrice Perez, and then Joel Kirkpatrick's murder.
Right. Yeah.
Even though they knew for sure that he committed 22 murders.
Exactly.
Plus.
Yeah. And then also
he killed so many people. Wow.
Right. I mean, so who knows how many people he actually killed and who, and like, I mean, who knows?
And it's also, I feel like being black, it kind of makes me incapable of separating this from the other parallels, like, you know, Central Park Five. And how they will literally stack charges onto these kids just so they can get a conviction, mm-hmm. knowing that they may or may not have done it at all, and they mm-hmm. didn't have any evidence and stuff like that. So it's like, you have the power to do that. And in this case, you're not going to stick him with the 70 that he mm-hmm. that he admitted to.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, oh, we can only, you know what I mean? If he was a nigga, you would have stacked him with some shit that you know he wasn't even around for. Mm-hmm. Stack him with murder before he was born, you know, some shit like that. So it's right. just like, to see these parallels, it also just makes me fucking want to rage.
Yeah.
But
that is a very, very wild story.
Yeah.
And him being able to be active for so long, so chaotically, is
yes.
terrifying.
Oh my God.
That's what's always for me. The ones that, like, are just random are the scariest. Because mm-hmm. they get away with it more often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, being random for longer, they can't figure clearly. Out the pattern. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's why I didn't even have an MO that made sense to even him, it seems like. He was just doing shit.
Yeah. Right. And he, I mean, when he died, he was only 50.
He could have been active for so much longer. How old was the Golden State Killer when he...
Yeah, that's wild.
But, oh yeah. Did they ever catch the Zodiac Killer? Or wasn't it like...
Didn't they do that last year?
I feel like they caught him.
But they figured because he was dead or something?
Yeah.
I feel like his grandchild said that they thought it was him or something. They yeah. did some forensics or something. I don't know. We'll have to look into it.
Yeah,
And if you go back and look at the pictures on, like, the guy, whoever the guy was, I think his name was Greg, but on his Facebook pictures, like, his friend was like, oh, yeah, he's a Zodiac Killer. My friend's a Zodiac Killer. And nobody took him seriously.
Mm, that's wild.
Like, y'all suck. Big time.
Yeah. This story is terrifying. I don't know. I do think that he was sick from the jump. I think that his mm-hmm. childhood and drug use and alcohol use probably increased whatever sickness he already was struggling with.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would have done all of this if he wasn't on so many crazy drugs for as long as he was, mm-hmm. if that like triggered his psychosis. I have no idea. But this is clearly from the murders and the lack of motive and just how random everything was. I feel like he just wasn't in his right mind. It was just like, I don't know.
It's wild to say I'm glad y'all are here because I didn't want to do this anymore. Like, the idea that someone can be compelled by something that, like, they literally can't control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's a thing, because I'm not a psychiatrist, but,
right.
I mean, it's not the first time we've heard of it. Is wow.
Yeah, that's why I was like, let me shut the fuck up, because I don't know. Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, just stop doing it. But it's like, I have stopping sense. Like, I have a mechanism in my brain that's like, don't, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And the way that I was socialized. But I feel like being socialized like that, and then also being fucked from the jump, like, 7 years old, you're alcoholic, like, he never had a chance.
Yeah.
So it's like, what compels him or what stops him is that that's a completely different world, and that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it was like, because besides his mom and his grandma, all these other crimes were, like, erratic. There was no real motive. It was just, like, time and place. But then the killing of Katie Harris clearly required more planning.
Yeah.
So I wonder if at that point he was like, okay, I need, like, this is too much. Yeah. Like, that was his, uh-huh. he was like, oh, I'm doing,
breaking point.
Right, I'm going too far.
Oh yeah, this was too hard.
Wow. Right,
I must have had some missed ups, but right. you never even did any planning in the first place.
Right, so I don't know. But anyway, that's the story of Tommy Lynn Sells, the Coast to Coast Killer. Hated it the yeah. whole time, mm-hmm. but yeah.
Well, thanks, Aaron.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, we can all go have nightmares now.
Hopefully, we actually have a should this be a crime?
We go lighter.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, we'll be back.
Should this be a crime? All right. So this happened a while ago, but we just remembered. So it's new to us. So YSL's, or I guess Young Thug's lawyer, who is white, got locked up on gang charges. Let's get into it. The attorney who was representing one of the former co-defendants of Young Thug's Atlanta racketeering and organized crime trial is now facing gang charges of her own. Nicole Fegan has been charged with participation in criminal street gang activity and criminal solicitation to commit the offense of tampering with evidence, according to the Atlanta Police Department. Nicole Fegan was representing Tenquarius Mender, whose case was severed from Young Thug's overall trial last year. If I mispronounce his name, please, y'all don't be my ass, okay? Like, it'd be like that sometimes. According to the police, they were investigating a September 27, 2022 shooting of two men at William Street and Baker Street in downtown Atlanta. I know exactly what the fuck that is. Police said that they received information that Fegan contacted a suspect in the shooting and told him of warrants for his arrest. Fegan provided information she had learned during a preliminary hearing related to the shooting and advised the suspect to dispose of his phone as police were going to arrest him, police said. Investigators confirmed Fegan was not representing the suspect that she called. Fegan was taken into custody in Gwinnett County and is now in Fulton County Jail. Right. This story is development. I'm sorry. A white bitch in Red Street?
Yeah.
That's what? Hilarious, girl. What the fuck are you doing? You're a lawyer. You studied law. You went to law school. You studied your torts, okay? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've seen how to get away with murder. I've seen how stressful that shit is. You went through all that just to get locked up for young motherfucking thug.
My favorite part about this whole thing was them showing her Instagram videos on Twitter. And someone's like, how hard is it to pass the bar?
It can't be that hard. What? Like a target? Like,
yeah.
I'm just going to pull my L. Wood shit because y'all are doing... Didn't he have another lawyer that brought up, like, anime or something like that? Like, compared... Like, they brought up some sort of, like, art that was in, like, a Bleach, like, Bleach anime or something like that.
I haven't been following this trial at all.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, she doesn't place. Represent the... She represents another person that's a part of the...
Yeah.
And the thing is, at this point, I wish that Boondocks was still making new episodes.
Same.
Because this feels like it came straight from that show.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't real. The whole trial, mind you.
Yes.
Because why are they playing the music at trial and people are nodding their heads to it? It's ridiculous. It's all ridiculous. And then these pictures from her Instagram circulating.
You're lying to me.
I'm about to play one of the videos.
Okay. Oh my god, please.
Because this is so serious.
I don't know about y'all, but I really do this shit. I'm proud of myself.
Wait, I wanted to start over.
I'm
It's her singing it, singing to the music. Every time we bleed, we bleed not guilty in the first place. I let my demon in the face, I'm putting it up on first way. She want my savings, so she... What is that? Official paperwork?
Yes.
Oh, the case?
Documents.
Girl.
She was just lip syncing to that song and then showing off some court docs.
This is... They call her YSL Mickey.
Oh, this is
I just
so
don't understand. Absurd. First of all, girl, you're white. You are white. And then two, you're white. And three, you were a law student. You passed the bar. You got out home free. You could have been working, I don't know, at fucking Ken Nugent and Associates or some shit. I don't fucking know. And then four, you're white. Like, why the fuck would you do this? Yeah. Like, why the fuck would you do this? You caught all these unnecessary nigga problems for fuck what? Like,
to prove that she was down. I mean,
that's what
clientele. I guess she was trying to connect to. I don't know.
She wanted to defend rappers for the rest of her career. Like, she
apparently
wanted to...
that was fun.
This is wild. Her Instagram is off the chain.
No, we definitely got to put the pictures in there.
Yes, it's crazy.
I'm so shook. Like, I'm so shook. Like, why would you throw your life away like that, girl? I would have been at Panera enjoying my
fucking
Ugg boots, enjoying my fucking pumpkin spice latte, doing white bitch shit. That shit is lit. What did you over here doing that shit for?
The thing is, like, this Instagram is hilarious. And I mean, you know, you can be, two things can happen at once. You can be a white girl that loves rappers and also be a lawyer. But why are you interfering with an official case?
Because you should absolutely know better.
You know better. Did you think it wasn't going to come out? You told them to get rid of their phones.
Are you that wasn't your client.
It wasn't your client at all. You could have kept your mouth shut.
You could have really just passed that note on to somebody else, and then they could have told that person.
You also know how Atlanta is handing out these big boy charges.
Fonnie Lou's not giving a fuck. She handing out RICO charges like parking tickets. Like, that bitch do not give a fuck about y'all, like, at all. They handing out that shit to people who was defending the forest before Cop City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what?
Yep.
This is so... I need to stop scrolling.
This entire trial is so... Look at just clips. You don't even have to look at all of them. Atlanta gets such a bad rap. I can't even defend Atlanta no more. I'm so sorry.
When people ask me where I'm from sometimes, now I'll take a second. I'll be like, I can't say North Carolina.
I stayed at the Georgia airport.
Not the Georgia airport.
Because listen, between Tisa Risa,
yeah,
and then this YSL trial, mm-hmm. and like the fucking Keith Lee come here, mm-hmm. talking about, so he couldn't get no, yep. Keith Lee couldn't get no food.
Yep.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Girl, y'all don't come here. Don't move here.
We
full, and some people need to leave.
Right. We're actually working on an exit strategy, right. For folks.
Oh my god. So yes, this is a crime. This is a literal crime, actually.
She will be going
to fuck to jail. She at Rice Street. That's like the worst place to be.
Sure,
other than Clayco. Like,
yeah.
Oh my god. So yes, it is actually a crime. And then two, it's a crime to be white. Listen, if you white, be white. Enjoy your whiteness. If I woke up white tomorrow, I would be straight out here. What do you mean? Like, I'm not trying to prove that I'm down for a fuck what? Like, yeah. Why do you want to be down with niggas? We get the bad rap. We want what y'all got. We want the privilege. Like, we don't want to be cool.
It always makes you think about that palm leaf, folks. Every single time.
What? Everybody want to be a nigga?
But so it's time to be.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
She found
girl.
Out the hard way.
She did.
They not finna hand her no like light charge either. She about to get the business.
No, she probably thought because she is white that they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, she could just get away with shit.
I don't know. A lot of them RICO charges for Stop Cop City is for against white people. Yeah. White people don't even fucking live here.
True.
So I don't know, girl. You might be down the road.
Her bio in her Instagram is Miss Got Proof. And I guess that's her thing. She has like merch that says "Got Proof."
Yeah, they got proof that your ass.
They sure did. They got the telephone cell phone records.
What if they came to court wearing her shit?
Oh my fucking god!
So yeah, a crime.
Yeah, very much so. Man. This is so unserious.
It is so.
Y'all
so
need it. Her Instagram is Fegan Law. And it is a time. It's very funny. And her comments are still on, so do with that what you will.
Yeah, you gotta leave somebody the password, so if you get locked up,
right.
Get this shit down.
Is this all y'all can afford? No, let me not say shit about what I said, because y'all not gonna come get me.
Also, if I'm an attorney and I'm representing folks in a RICO case and still actively doing shit to involve myself, I don't have social media. What do you mean?
Absolutely not.
Like,
absolutely not.
Disabled.
Yeah, no. That's these tweets are protected.
Yeah.
Well, well, that's a crime. I'm a fucking one. And it's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, let us know what you think.
Please.
You can find us online at
Ina Killa Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter and TikTok, and Ina Killa Pod on Twitter.
And you can listen to us on Apple Music. You can listen to us on Spotify, anywhere where you can find podcasts, except Facebook, because they're fucking fascists. So, yeah, that's what it is. Bye.
Bye. Bye.